Broadcasting worldwide on internet radio.
Refreshing takes on legal strategies.
Straightforward answers to difficult tax questions.
Independent ideas on building wealth. The Refresher Wealth Show with Mark Kohler and Matt Sorensen.
Previously recorded with Mark as the host of The Mark Kohler Show.
Enjoy this fresh take on strategies to better live the American dream.
Your host. It's another historic show about building wealth, saving taxes, and better living the American dream. Excited to be here with you. One of my favorite times of the week where we get to talk about, man, all the good stuff in life, right? Just making money, saving money. I don't know. It helps us enjoy some of those hobbies of ours a little bit better and time with our family and our loved ones, doing the things we love outside of working. And I know some of you are workaholics and you love to work. Well, this is your show. This is where you're at. Thanks to all you new listeners that are out here hanging out with us today. I appreciate you giving us a chance to impact your life. And for all you regular listeners, thank you for tuning in. I know many, many, many of you catch this after the fact on the podcast through iTunes or through Blog Talk Radio. So hopefully you're multitasking, maybe working out at the gym, returning some emails, driving, commuting, whatever the case may be. Thank you for joining us. Got a great show planned today. This is all about social media today. At the bottom of the hour, we'll bring on a special guest. Excited to introduce him. The book is titled Tweet Naked. I was expecting a little more something salacious, but it's not what you think. So anyway, some of you may tweet naked, but it's definitely about the strategies of tweeting and social media in whole. We're going to be hitting a lot of the social media strategies that can really help you in your business, make more money, stay connected, do the things you need to look professional. It's a moving target, and I highlighted that. To me, I oftentimes get confused on what I need to be doing with social media. And I'll come back to that point as I introduce our special guest a little bit later. But again, we're here in the throes of tax season. Some very, very important points and topics and considerations we need to go over. I think it's important that we hit some of these deadlines and announcements that you may have seen in the newsletter this week. I'm so excited to be with you. I just love it. This is again, a special time of me each week to be part of your lives. I'm getting all cheesy right now, so I'll get off that. Let's talk tax deadline, huh? Woo! Well, for some of you that are listening to this within the last week, there's nothing going on in the next 10 days that's going to rock your world deadline-wise. I guess maybe the biggest would be March 31st, the deadline to apply for Obamacare. So for all of you entrepreneurs out there, and you don't plan on getting a job with someone that's going to throw benefits at you, you don't have many options before March 31st, but to get signed up. That's it. You're going to have a penalty that could be $95 or 1% of your adjusted gross income later on next year. It'll be due on your tax return if you don't get insurance in the next 2 weeks. So make sure by March 31st you get your application in and going. Now, there are extenuating circumstances. Later on in the year, you can get insurance that will exempt you out of the penalty. I think a birth of a child, a death of a family member or spouse, a divorce, you get a new job. There may even be a move. I think there is a move exemption where you're changing to a new policy. So there are a few options where there can be a disruption, but the bottom line is if you don't have insurance going on after March 31st, you're going to have to do some dancing. So let's make sure you're on top of that. Also come April, just 4 weeks away, we've got our first major deadline for personals, and that's our tax returns for 1040s. Now, as many of you have heard me say, probably 70% of our clients are extenders. Extending your tax return filing is very common. Many of you that are anxious to get your tax return done in the next 4 weeks, just get your information in. Let our staff know that you're anxious and you want it done and there's a particular reason. And we'll work as quickly as we can. But the deadline's getting closer, and so therefore some of you are going to get extended anyway, and that's okay. I think it's been 10 or 12 years since I filed before April 15th, and it reduces your chances of an audit and gives you more time to get your tax returns done and do a better job at it. I was joking. I was just meeting with some clients in the other room, and they said, "Mark, you mentioned this the other day on your show," and they thought it was kind of funny because I referenced them as being mad at me for changing a strategy or something on them, and they said, "Mark, we were mad," and now I'm going to reference them again, and so I promised them I wouldn't do it, but I'll just say this: it was interesting just in this last conversation. The beautiful wife of this couple, she says, "Mark, what about these write-offs for last year? I've already handed them off to your team. Are we going to be able to take those last year?" And I said, "Let's look at them." And closely we looked and determined that, oh my gosh, those are going to be a perfect write-off this year. And I'm glad we had a chance to talk about that. And so just that little conversation is going to probably drive $5,000 or $6,000 or more into this year's tax return and give them a much better write-off in the long run, which they may have phased out last year for. So those little tidbits and morsels of information are things that you would never get on TurboTax. You'd never get if you were rushing. Please take the time to have a conversation with your personal tax consultant. We call them our PTCs at our office. So just as an example, that little conversation is going to save them thousands. So I want to mention that is a little tipster there for some of the critical deadlines coming up. Just a couple of articles there. Matt Sorensen had a great article in the newsletter and on his blog on 60-day rollovers with IRAs and what the IRS is saying and what tax court are saying. Basic point was don't trust the IRS. If some of you heard that before. Anyway, you want to read that article. There's some really interesting news there. And I had a couple articles, primarily the one I found interesting was paying your tax bill with your credit card or debit card and getting points and mileage points with your credit card through paying these big tax bills throughout the year and on April 15th. The IRS is offering that more and more. There's two service companies you work through to do that, and I talked about a client of ours that just ended up on a cruise with points he had earned paying for his taxes. So it was kind of the gift that gave back, I guess, paying taxes, living in this amazing country. Got a little extra out of that. So that client was very strategic in that process. And I talked about also the ability to write off some of the expenses related to divorce. Because if divorce wasn't hard enough financially and emotionally, there are some ways to you can write off certain portions of the costs related to divorce, but not a lot. So don't get your hopes up. If it wasn't miserable enough and the cost of divorce, you're not going to get much of a write-off with all those lawyer fees as well, legal fees. So just check out those articles. I think you'll find them find them useful. Now, we've got several tipsters on the show today, as usual, that we try to provide a variety of thoughts and strategies and stories and angles of looking at things. And I want to get Dustin Johnson out here on the show right away. He's one of our regulars, new partner in the Kohler & Ayer firm. We're so excited to have him as a part of the team for the long term. We can't get rid of him now. He's not going to get rid of us. So we're so excited to have him here with us on a regular basis, and I know he's swamped back at the office, so I want to get him on and off, get back to work. So, Dustin, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me, Mark.
You bet. And thank you for all you do for the firm and the clients, and I should say partner. Kind of got a ring to it.
Yeah, it sounds good, doesn't it? No, I appreciate it. It's been a great 5 years. Take six if it include my internship here. So it's been a great ride. I'm enjoying it.
Yeah, look at that partnership track, folks. Boy, he was on fast track, right? 5 or 6 years, and he's sitting at the big table now. I'm so excited. We love Dustin. He's awesome. So cute family. Well, anyway, enough about you. Let's talk about our listeners and a tip or strategy you got for us today.
Perfect. Well, as you No, we had this deadline yesterday, and so extensions have kind of been on my mind, and you talked about them a little bit this morning, but I wanted to bring up another aspect, because we have clients that that even still, they'll say, hey, I can't or don't want to pay by April 15th. I want to file an extension, thinking that filing the extension and not paying will still get them out of any penalties until October 15th. We've had it come up even last year where clients did that, and then when we prepared their tax return and showed them how much they owed plus the penalty for not paying it by April 15th, they were shocked and a little upset that they had to pay some additional penalties and interest. So I wanted to get that out now. I wanted to get it out early so that our clients can understand or know that, hey, I will have a liability. Either start saving up now to pay with an extension, or just know that that's coming and be okay with it.
Yeah, I think that's a great point. And I'll share on a personal note. There's been many a year where I filed my extension and I didn't send in a payment. The cost of putting it on a credit card or digging up money out of the business, I thought it was better use of my money to pay the penalties and interest for not filing on April, or not paying my entire deposit on April 15th. And you can easily calculate it out, folks, and you may say to yourself, that cost of doing business is, that money is better used somewhere else. But don't be mad at us, I think is what Dustin's trying to say here. Just know, go in with your eyes wide open that April 15th. Now, Dustin, but is it okay to not file an extension then? Because if I'm not going to pay, why should I even worry about an extension? I don't know. What do you think?
No, that one will definitely want to file an extension. The penalties for not filing an extension are much steeper than the late payment. And you brought up a good point, and it's something that I wanted to hit on too. Sorry, I'm going to jump back into this not paying by April 15th. Always want to file an extension. But on the payment, I agree with you 100%. It's a very small penalty. In fact, the maximum penalty that the IRS will charge you for paying late is 2.5%. It's half of 1% each month that it's paid late, up to 5 months. So you're looking at a maximum of 2.5%. So like Mark said, like you said, you know, if that money can be better used in your business so you don't have to go get a line of credit, or you don't have to, you know, put it on the credit cards where interest rates are a little bit higher than half of a percent a month, and capped at 2.5%, it absolutely makes sense. But just knowing that that's what's going to happen, I think that's the frustration that some that people have, is that, hey, I didn't know. I want the option. And if they've got the option, you know, then they can decide. Like you said, it's better used in my business.
No, great comment. And I'm glad you gave some actual numbers there. And I just want to reiterate, it's like we're tag-teaming everybody here, but I want to point this out again too. That 2.5% maximum penalty, plan on that, I don't know if I want to say times three, but it goes up dramatically when you don't file the extension. So, folks, the moral of the story is use your money where it's best, and number two, at least file the extension so that it's not major damage. I don't know.
And on the extension, we can throw out – no, that's perfect. If you don't file an extension, the penalty is 5% per month.
Wow.
So at a maximum of 25%. So, I mean, it goes up dramatically. We have to file the extension. That one is not an option. If you don't want to pay and you're willing to take that 2.5% penalty, perfect. It's really not that large in the grand scheme of things. But we need to file an extension. We have to file an extension.
Yeah, and you know what? Again, folks, I don't want you to get disturbed with this topic. We'll move on here in 2 seconds. But maybe 2 minutes, but there's another article in my blog today that went out in the newsletter where I talked about what are the options if I can't pay, and that means maybe even past the extension time, October, or I can't I didn't come up with the money. I had a terrible summer. I broke my leg, whatever the case could be, heaven forbid. But there are other options, too. The installment agreement request system is even more generous than it's ever been before. There's ways to contact the IRS and work on abatement of penalties if you have some sort of extraordinary circumstance. There's offers and compromises. There's all sorts of ways to deal with what you owe the IRS, but I want to throw this out. I had a phone call with a client this morning at 9 o'clock that has not filed their tax return in 2 years. And regrettably, he's been very successful financially. And he's just been busy. He just hasn't taken the time to get his books done. And he even said, Mark, I know I'm going to owe, and the penalty is going to be brutal. And I don't think he knows how bad it's going to be. It could be up to 25% of what he owes plus interest. It's not going to be pretty. And so, folks, just don't delay. And there's ways to deal with it. But filing is one of the best things you can do. Just get the freaking tax return in there, even if you can't pay. I don't know. Dustin, any final words for us? Words of wisdom?
No, Mark. I think we're good. Again, the reason I brought this up, and I hate to bring out the gloom and doom, and I know it's not a sexy topic, but the knowledge is power. You know, helping clients analyze the best use of their money, if it's paying on April 15th or paying later. You know, just having that option and that information is critical. So that's why I wanted to bring that up today. And give them a few weeks to prepare if that was hopefully wasn't much of a shock to too many people. But if it was, you know, now you've got 4 weeks to prepare.
Yep. Good stuff. Well, thank you, Dustin. That's Dustin Johnson, the newest partner at the firm K&E CPAs. Here with us every 3 or 4 weeks, he'll jump on and share a tip or a strategy or story. We are grateful to have him. If you want to reach him, it's Dustin, D-U-S-T-Y-N, Dustin Johnson, or Dustin at ke-cpas.com. Just call the main number and you can reach out to him. Dustin, thank you, sir.
Hey, thanks for having me, Mark.
You betcha.
Always
we'll,
a pleasure.
We'll catch you in a few weeks after this break, probably.
Perfect. Sounds great. Thanks, Mark.
All right. Well, folks, I want to head over to our other tipster today. We're hoping to have him on the show on a regular basis. We're not going to make any other special announcements yet, but we may have some exciting partnerships taking place with this man. His name is Randy Lubke. He's been on the guest many times on the show. Been a guest on the show many times before. He is a certified financial planner. And that designation, he's got several other letters that go behind his name on the financial planning realm. He's also a licensed loan broker officer. He's got just credential after credential. He's a huge asset to our clients, and we're grateful to have him on the show to share a regular tip in the financial planning world. And I've asked him to come on again to please talk about the Social Security strategy. He's been giving workshops on a regular basis on this and writing some articles, and it's been quite shocking what the government is trying to do to take away Social Security for those at higher income levels. So we're excited to have him here on the show to talk about this topic and anything else that's on his mind. Randy, welcome to the show. Oh, and he may be on mute. Are you muted your own phone? Are you there, Randy? Oh, and he may be in a bad spot. We're going to let him take a minute, see if we can get him in a better area. Walking around might help. Let's confirm one last time, and then maybe we'll go to our other guest until we get Randy in a better area. Randy, are you there?
I'm here, Mark. You can't hear me?
Yeah, it doesn't sound too crisp, but clear. You might want to walk to a spot where it's we can get a better reception. But welcome again, Randy.
Let's try that.
For being here. There you go.
Hi, Mark. How are you today?
Oh, you're sounding better already. So wherever you're moving to, it sounds good.
Oh, great.
So, Randy, tell us about this Social Security. You sent me an email that was just really shocking to me about how folks that have been paying into the system for years and years and years, but heaven forbid they're successful financially, the government's saying maybe you don't deserve all of your Social Security. Is that right? Is that what I understood? Clear that up for us.
Yeah. It's part of one of the upcoming budget proposals, and it's buried, of course, deep inside the proposal. But the idea is that there are a lot of different strategies that we can help our clients to maximize the amount of money they'll be able to pull out of their Social Security account. And one of the proposals for government is to limit those and essentially take them away, which is, you know, quite shocking when you think that people have been paying into these things for, you know, 30, 40 years or more, and now they're going to get the benefits they expect. And guess what? The government says, well, maybe not so fast. Maybe you won't get those.
Wow. Well, as we've all known, and we've talked about it here on the show before, when we're watching laws being made in Congress and in Washington, it's like watching sausage being made. So it gets a little ugly. So we're just going to leave that out there as it's part of the new budget proposal. Whether it comes to fruition or not, we'll see. But Randy, talk to us about some of the strategies that we can do now. Like, I know I know that sounds weird. When you approached me about this even a month ago, I was like, really? There's things I can do? But you talk about Social Security planning. I mean, that sounds really odd to me. What are some things people don't even know they can do now to take better advantage of Social Security?
Sure. Well, today I wanted to talk about a specific benefit called survivor benefits. Sometimes they're referred to as widow's benefits or widower's benefits. And, you know, there's many types of Social Security benefits. There's the benefit you make for making contributions. There's the benefits you could have by having a spouse. And of course, this has now more implications now with same-sex marriages being recognized at the federal level. So I want to talk specifically about the survivor's benefits. And just so you understand what that is, if you've been married to someone for more than 9 months, is all it takes, you would be entitled to a survivor's benefit. And by the way, if your spouse were to pass away but because of an accident, there's really no limit. So you could literally, you know, walk out of the chapel, get hit by a bus, and the surviving spouse would be entitled to a survivor's benefit. So that's how you get it. You get married, and you're eligible for that benefit at age 60. Instead of waiting to your full retirement age, you can actually get a partial benefit at age 60, and as young as age 50 if you find yourself disabled.
Huh. Okay. Once we've been married 9 months, I'm not sure how long Anna Nicole Smith was married to her husband if she made the 9 months. I'm just trying to think.
I got a feeling Anna Nicole would care so much about her Social Security benefit based on the guy she was married to. What do you think?
Yeah, that's true. You know, what's $3 billion, you know? You know, $1 billion.
Yeah.
I mean, I can
yeah.
earn a bill. See, I should mention this. I'm going to plan on being $1 billion richer next month when my bracket goes completely, you know, through the system at ESPN without one loss. I'm gonna pick every game winner. So it's gonna be sweet. So next month we can talk about my $1 billion tax planning.
Celebration. That'll be fun.
Yeah, it'll be great. Okay, we're gonna talk bracketology next week, and of course after we get through this first round. Let me understand this again too. So I've been married at least 9 months. My spouse dies.
Yes.
Do I get to start collecting Social Security immediately, or not until I'm 60? Their Social Security. When do I get to collect their?
Age 60 would be the soonest you'd get survivor's benefits. Now, you might be entitled to benefits for your children immediately, and in fact, if you have young children, that's something that you'd want to look into. But you personally, as a surviving spouse, you'd have to wait till typically age 60. And what I wanted to do today is give you a specific example, a case study that I did for one of my clients. Is that okay? Do we have like 2 minutes for that?
Yeah, throw it out there.
All right, good. So this particular woman is working still, and she came to me, you know, to do her retirement planning, and she's 66 years old. And I don't know if you or your listeners know this, but depending on what age you are, you achieve what's called full retirement age at different ages. In her case, it was 66. We'll go into full retirement age another time, but basically it means for her that she could continue to work and make all the money she was making, and she had a really good salary, but she would be eligible to receive her Social Security benefits without being dinged for it. So, you know, she came to me and said, hey, I'm ready to start taking my Social Security benefits. And, you know, as part of the discussion, I said, well, you understand that if you take them now, even though you're not going to get dinged for it, meaning they're not going to reduce your benefits because you're working, you're also going to lose the benefit of what's called delayed credits. And again, Mark, just to be real simple, we'll go on delayed credits another call, but every year that you don't take your Social Security benefits, the amount of benefit that you'll actually receive is increased, and it's pretty significant. In her case, it's 8% a year. So if she's 66 and we could delay those benefits until she was 70, just 4 more years, she gets 32% more income for the rest of her life. It's a big deal.
Wow. Wow. Interesting strategy. So I suspect since she's making a salary, you probably encouraged her not to take her Social Security.
I did, and she didn't like that. she wanted to get her Social Security. But as part of the interview process, my interview, you know, fact-finding, I knew that she had been married. But what I didn't know until I asked her the second question is, you know, where's your husband today? And unfortunately, her husband had passed away like 20 years ago. She just never remarried. And long story short, you know, 9 months, they're married, she's eligible for the for that survivor benefit. So I sent her down to the Social Security office now to apply for that benefit. Now, if she had gone there on her own, most likely, they would have said, yes, you're eligible for that survivor benefit, but what she needed to do is one more thing, which is file what's called a restricted claim. So she was going to, did she go into the Social Security office, typically they'll help you fill out the paperwork. They would give you a claim based on your work record, and even though it's a survivor benefit, it would have triggered that Social Security for her and disallow that delayed benefit of adding 8% a year. So by sending her there and saying, no, I want to file a restricted benefit, I'm restricting my claim to my survivor benefit only, and I want to allow my benefit to continue to grow, she was able to get about $8,400 a year on the survivor benefit, and then 32% more she'll be able to pull out of her own benefit once she actually takes it.
Wow, gosh, just a little bit of strategy there is amazing. Now, again, we've got one other tipster and then our special guest here at the bottom of the hour, so I got to move quick on this, but I got one quick email question from one of our listeners. The question was, Randy, okay, if I remarry, do I still get the survivor benefits from a spouse that I was married to previously that passed away? So I'm going to rephrase that. So let me rephrase that. So I'm married for at least 9 months, my spouse dies, and then I get remarried, live another 20 years, and then as soon as I turn 60, can I still go back and claim the restricted benefits on my first spouse death Social Security, even though I remarried somewhere along the line?
Yes, because it doesn't work on a spousal benefit, because if you get remarried, then you'll lose.
Oh, and we're losing Randy again here. So we may have to reserve that question for another day, and since we're on a tight timeline here, we're going to let Randy go. But folks, because he's broken up and we've missed him here, that's Randy Lubke. If you need to get a hold of him, please email me and say, oh my gosh, I want to talk Social Security with this guy. How can I get a consultation? He's out of Newport Beach, California. He's been very involved in a lot of our workshops previously. He'll be back on the show. Folks, every 2 to 3 weeks, we're going to have him back. Now, before we get to our special guest, we've just got one other tipster here for just a couple minutes. I'm going to restrict him here for a short time. I'm so sorry, but we've got Lee Chen, a regular guest on our show, our attorney running the California office for KKOS Lawyers, a huge asset to many of our clients again. Lee, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Mark. Great to be back on.
Well, I am so sorry that we've just gotten carried away with tax return penalties and filing and Social Security here, and I've cut you short, and I know that you usually prepare a really wonderful little legal tip from the legal side of things for us. Can I ask you to share it briefly here? What did you have in mind today that might impact someone?
Sure. Well, I had a pretty seasoned real estate investor who was having some problems with the deal, and they wanted her, as part of an exit strategy, to be a part of a land trust. And so I looked over the land trust and I said, do you know what this thing is? Well, no. And, you know, I get so many calls from people who ask me about land trust and they have no idea what it is. And so one of the things that I wanted just to tell everyone is, you know, if you do run across some of these things, you really need to get a consult with an attorney to talk about it, because there's a lot of misinformation out there regarding these types of trusts.
Oh, great comment. And it doesn't mean that the deal with the realtor was bad per se, but this land trust is almost like a contract, and there could be some very poison pill type provisions in there that where she may not ever get her commission because she signed on to this land trust. So I suspect that's one of the main issues is just going through that in detail. Is that correctly?
Well, it was an investor. But, you know, she was told that, well, you're going to get asset protection and, you know, your name's not going to show up on title. A lot of the typical things that we hear about land trusts, and I get this all the time. It'll give me asset protection. It'll give me asset protection. No, it won't. And so, you know, if you are being told that, you really need to speak with an attorney because there are, you know, the reality is that, you know, if you get sued, that land trust is going to be pierced in no time. And so that's one of the main things I want to tell people is that if you are being asked to enter into one of these, you know, they're okay for certain types of transactions. They're not something that I would just generally use all the time. So that's why if you're being asked to enter into one of these, there may be some benefits, but talk to an attorney about it so you can be clear as to what's going on because we never tell people to sign stuff if they don't understand it.
Yeah, I like it. Very good. Well, Lee, thank you so much. The land trust is a huge topic. We should dedicate a show to land trusts on an occasion. But thank you for keeping your comments brief. I appreciate it. And I know that you'll be back here on the show on a regular basis. Folks, that's Lee Chen, Lee, L-E-E, at KKOSlawyers.com. And here in the California office, so give us a call, and you can schedule time with Lee if you need it. Thanks, Lee.
Nope, you're very welcome.
All right. Well, folks, now we're here at the bottom of the hour with our special guest, who I'm excited to introduce here. I've wanted to have him on the show here for quite some time, and we're grateful that he's been able to make some time for us. And so, of course, I mentioned him early on. This is Scott Levy, an expert in the constantly changing field of social media, author of the book Tweet Naked, A Bare-All Social Media Strategy for Boosting Your Brand and Your Business. And I dove into that book hoping it had to do something with the clothing I was not wearing when I was doing my social media, and that's not the case. A very powerful book, and he knows not just the Twitter nation, if you will. He's an expert in all aspects of social media, CEO and president of Fuel Online, one of the highest-ranked SEO firms and social media companies in the country. So without any further ado, we're excited to have him here with us. Scott, welcome to the show.
Hey, Mark. I appreciate it.
Well, thank you. I maybe you learned something along the way there, too. Are you going to make some changes in your Social Security planning, maybe? I'm not sure.
yeah, I'm a little ways off, but...
No problem. Well, that's good. Well, and you'll be surprised of all the little strategies Randy has with that along the way when you're getting there. So,
some useful information.
Oh, yeah, fascinating. Well, Scott, thank you for finding some time to join us. I've got a copy of your book right here. I gave it to my assistant the other day and said, you've got to get this guy on our show. And so we're so grateful you found some time to be with us. And I've got already some questions that have come in online from our listeners. And folks, if you do have a question during this portion of the show, please send me an email, Mark, M-A-R-K, at markjkohler.com, or, of course, reply to the newsletter or Mark at KKOS Lawyers, any of those. If you're listening here, you know how to get a hold of me. But send me an email with a question for Scott. If you're listening live, you can press the number 1 on your phone and let Lisa in the studio know you'd have a live question. Many of you are on the chat line as well. You can always type up a question on the chat line. So, Scott, gosh, without further ado, let me ask this. Does social media still impact my business? I mean, I just don't know. I mean, it's still powerful and helpful, right? Tell us what we need to be doing.
It's not that it's still power, you know, it's actually probably the single most important business driver there is today versus traditional media. It's pretty much taken over everything. Hmm. I mean, go ahead.
No, I was going to say, when you say that, let's define social media. You're probably including your website as well, which is a huge driver.
I really don't. That's part of your online presence. But social media is really just that. It's social forms of media where you can engage and interact with people. So, for example, Twitter, Facebook, even message forums are surprisingly a form of social media, and people don't think about that.
let's go through the list a little bit further. So we traditionally think of Facebook and Twitter. What are some other ones, maybe not as popular, but still could be important in some areas of the some industries? LinkedIn, or what is your master list that you'll go over with someone?
LinkedIn is an excellent tool for B2B. You've got YouTube is actually considered social media because people can interact and engage with each other via comments. Pinterest is a phenomenal platform that's completely visually driven. And it's a great demographic for women. I think they rule about 70 to 80% of Pinterest. And you'll see a lot of people basically visually scrapbooking on there, you know, vacations, wedding planning, home decorating ideas, or, you know, if you're redoing your house, things like that. It's just really any food is a big thing on there as well.
I'm listing some of these other ones here that I just wanted to, again, I know that the social media net is quite broad, but Instagram, Etsy, are those included in your opinion?
No, I mean, a lot of people think they are, but they really aren't to me. I mean, I suppose you could consider Instagram a part of social media, but to me, it's when it comes to business, social media is about platforms that can drive traffic and leads to your site ultimately, which is, that's your ultimate goal, right? To get people to get a hold of you or to see what you're really doing. So, one of the things I try to tell people is just because the social media platform exists doesn't mean you need to be on it. I think you're a lot better off focusing on a couple of platforms, being really, really, really good at them versus being on all the platforms and sucking at all of them.
You only have
so much bandwidth to be good on each platform.
Yeah. That makes total sense. And I had a question here from Sharon, and this is one that I wanted to bring up right off the bat. This is via email. She's like, Mark, I was apprehensive listening to today's show because I'm just not very tech-oriented, and I don't really have a social media platform. I don't know what I'm doing. Is it something I should worry about? Please ask your guest right off if how it impacts all of us that may not be so tech-savvy. What are your thoughts when it comes to that type of question?
You know, I hear that a lot, and I really don't – I don't know if you have any more information about her, but, it, I mean, does she have a business? Is she trying to build a personal brand? You know, there's a lot of questions that need to be asked there. And the answer as far as what platforms to be on and how to go about them is really going to depend on what that person's trying to do. But, you know, as long as you can surf the Internet, which I think almost everybody can – you can be pretty good at social media. It's really, it's really about providing value to people. So if you're a consultant or you're an expert in an industry or you have some type of company, whether it's a plumbing company or you're a landscape or, you know, or you're a Fortune 500, the bottom line is, can you provide value to people? Can you provide information, news, tips? Can you be viewed as a resource? Otherwise, you know, a lot of times just existing on social media can be a negative thing if you exist and then don't interact or engage with people. Because if you have a representation online, if you have a Twitter account, if you have a Facebook account, and you put up your company or your personal brand on there, but then you never answer anybody or you never engage with anybody or you never post any content, then people are going to think you don't care and you're not listening. And customer service is absolutely crucial today. Right? The best customer service really wins for brands. And customer service is being delivered more and more via social media today. So if somebody contacts your brand, they say they tweet you and say, hey, listen, I had a bad experience at this office or this location or this product, you know, broke for me. If you don't respond to them, you look like you don't care. So you got to really make sure that you're on there for the right reasons and you're ready to do it.
So if I hear what you're saying, it's if you're going to do social media, do it, or don't do it at all.
Really, I hate to be that brash with it, but yeah, because, I mean, think about this. Think about when you don't get a response from a company, or you call them, or you've been on hold for an hour, and you start hating them every minute more and more. Or if you've ever tweeted a company about a particular, like a product launch, or when is this coming out, or and nobody answers you, you kind of get a bad taste in your mouth about the company.
Yeah, wow. And that makes sense. Now, tell us what's changed. To me, it feels like a moving target. I have to say I was a little jaded when I wrote the title for the show today because I really wanted you to come on and tell us what's different. I know your book is about that, you know, that things can get too complicated with social media. We need. What are your thoughts? What's changed if people need
the premise of the book is trying to teach people who, whether you're trying to build a personal brand or a Fortune 500 brand, is to tweet naked. And that applies to all social media. And what it means is, in the old days, you know, I mean, just way back at the beginning of the internet, you wanted to be this corporate monster. You wanted to look like a big company. You wanted to have your logo representing everything. And what tweet naked means and a bare all social media strategy means is today personality wins. Transparency wins. People want to connect with companies that seem real and seem personable. You don't want to talk to robots. You don't want to talk to a Fortune 100 or Fortune 500 logo. You want to know about the people who are behind the brand and connect with real personalities. So the book teaches you how to be transparent, how to be real, how to share things that are going on in your office, funny competitions or contests you guys have, or, you know, somebody's pet that they brought to the office. Putting a personality and a flavor and a flair behind your brand, that's typically behind your brand, up front and center, letting people connect, build that human connection with people via social media. And that's what makes your brand likable on social media, and that's what gets people to engage with you, and that's what makes people share your posts, because they like your company.
Question here, too. Google Plus, is where does this fit into the equation? Is that another player that we need to start worrying about too?
Yeah, I'm actually not a fan. Not a fan at all. You know, I'm also involved heavily in the startup industry, you know, and tech investing and everything like that. I'm really honestly disappointed with Google Plus. I don't think there's anything original about it. It's just duplicate of every other social media platform out there. It doesn't do anything special. And it goes back to what I said. You know, you got to pick a couple of platforms and be really good at them. You can't just, you know, be on every platform or every social media site. The idea behind social media for me is I want to create value. I want to be seen as a resource. And you do that by sharing original content, creative, interesting content, news, tips, articles, radio shows, you know, like you're doing. But you can't just copy and paste your content on six different social networks. You need to provide unique content and value on each individual network. So do you want to do that on six of them, or would you rather do a really, really good job on two and have a large following and be in constant contact with everybody and be able to engage? You can't check every single platform you're on and engage with everybody on all those platforms.
Well, and I guess what I think is that moving target is that, you know, 5 years ago it was, oh, yeah, I got to get on Facebook. And then it was like, oh, Facebook's, it's too teenager, it's too social, you need to go over to LinkedIn. So I run over to LinkedIn, and then I'm like, well, this is weird, this is not what I envisioned. Okay, but I'll do it. And then it's like in the last year, oh, you got to be on Google Plus, because Google Plus is where all the business owners are. You don't want to be on Facebook.
No.
I'm like, okay,
everything you're hearing with a grain of salt. I mean, it's unfortunate, but in this industry, there's a lot of overnight sensations and gurus and ninjas and whatever else they want to call themselves, but there's a lot of people that don't truly understand business and don't truly understand social. There's nothing special or unique about Google Plus. It's just another place to post your content. It's not all business owners or anything like that. It's you know, actually a lot of times with these new social media platforms that you see pop up, is what you're going to find is people who want to be quote-unquote early adopters or the pioneers. So people will jump on it early to try to get well embedded on it, get an early following, say they were there in the beginning. And that happens a lot. And typically, it's just going to really be people in the tech industry and social media industry and sometimes in the business sector, just trying to get an early jump start. But pick a couple platforms. Twitter and Facebook are excellent. Facebook is still excellent. It still has the most people on it, you know, the highest level of engagement. And that's a whole other show and conversation. But unfortunately, with Facebook and their algorithms, you don't always reach your entire audience when you post. And that's, like I said, that's a complicated and whole other conversation. They've done that for revenue reasons. Twitter is excellent because all of the people who follow you on Twitter will always have a chance or an opportunity to see your tweets. You know, Twitter is an interesting animal because it's basically a timeline or a feed, right? So if you follow thousands of people, there's no way you can scroll back through and look at every single tweet that's come through. So you don't. That's why I put, and everyone has different approaches. That's why I only follow a few hundred people right now. I want a really tactical feed on Twitter that is the exact information and news and connections of people that I want to hear from on a daily basis. There's people that go out and follow as many people as they have followers, and that's fine if they're not serious about it or they're not serious about obtaining information from it. But there's no way you can sort 2,000 tweets that, you know, a day.
So, but, where does someone get? Where, can I ask it? Like, where does someone get started? So, we've got our listeners here, and this is fascinating. I'm enjoying the conversation, and I'm following you. But where should the average small business owner start? And I guess that's kind of back to that question.
Absolutely.
At the beginning,
so
right?
Where you start is, how can I provide value and be seen as a resource in my industry via social media? That's the question that everybody should ask themselves. So if you're an attorney, you need to go out, and if you want to do this and do it the right way, provide value. Provide information, tips, news, answer questions, participate in tweet chats. Be seen as a resource and have no expectations in return. And with that, when people respect your opinion and they see that you're out there offering information and value, they'll follow you and they'll engage with you and they'll even become a brand champion. I mean, that's how I wound up with 365,000 followers.
Wow, fascinating. Now, so how do you build that many followers? I mean, that's one of the...
It's just time and effort. You really have to put some genuine effort into being viewed as a resource. You know, if you're a comic, Then tweet funny things. If you're an attorney, tweet tips every day or help people. Offer free Q&A. Give value without any expectations in return, and over time, you will build that brand via social media. People will love you and like your brand, your personal or business brand that you're developing. It's not about selling. It's not about pitching. It's not about saying, hey, we've got a special for $5.99, or hey, we're just getting this new product in now. And there's nothing wrong with alerting to people about things that you're doing, but it should not be the purpose. The purpose should be, how can I be viewed as a resource in my industry? You make yourself an expert in the industry by doing that.
Yeah, I've got a question.
It's a tremendous opportunity.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I've got a question via Lori on the web here. Or internet, sorry. Lori asks, is there a phone app? And I just love her question here, because this is the mysterious question I constantly have. Is there an application for my phone that is most wise and strategic to use to send my message out? Like this Hootsuite, I'm going to add to her question here, this Hootsuite, or is there something there that is efficient for me with my smartphone?
Yeah, there's some good ones. It just really depends if you're Android or iOS. I'm an Android user, so my favorite social media management app is Tweetcaster. I think it's excellent. It manages everything, and they have really, really nice versions for tablets, too, that are even more robust than the phone app, but it's pretty good. I know that Hootsuite's okay. I'm not a huge fan of it, to be honest with you. I think there's better stuff out there.
Okay. So for the is there a, where does LinkedIn fit into all this for the business-to-business aspect? Is, should they folks stay away from the Facebook if they're more business after business, or what? Where? How do they make a decision
if you're,
between the two?
If you're, you know, I wouldn't say stay away from Facebook. It's good to have the presence on there if you have the quality content to put out there, right? LinkedIn is just an animal within itself. It's very unique. It's business-to-business networking. It's a great way also to find employees and resources. It's really a lot of people marketing themselves and their abilities. They've also been positioning themselves lately as to be viewed as a hub for content. So they've kind of taken the same thing that I'm talking about, and allowing people to be experts in their industry or their niche by sharing content on there as well. But it's an incredible way to find people, employees, and resources. And it's also an interesting way to pitch people and communicate on a platform where it's expected, unlike Twitter or Facebook, where it's not really politically correct to pitch people. But LinkedIn is definitely more of a business networking platform.
What about the ads? You alluded to that a moment ago. When it comes to ads, specifically, I guess, on Facebook, when should someone make the jump to building an ad campaign and going down that path?
You know, I actually start backwards. A lot of people go out and they just create their ads and they start trying to see if they can get clicks or try to decide how much money they should spend on their ads. But what you really need to do is think about your ROI. You need to think, okay, I've got an ad. Someone's going to click on it. It's going to cost me 50 cents or it's going to cost me $8. Then what? You got to work backwards. They're going to land on your website. What is your user experience when they land on your website? How well does your website convert to leads? Because if it's not converting, right, like say you already get 50 visitors a day to your website or 100 visitors and you get very few, if any, leads, do you think magnifying that is going to make it any better? You're better off spending time and money and energy creating a really high quality site that will convert those leads, and then you do your advertising. But that being said, if you have an awesome website and it works really, really well and it generates leads and it converts, you know, then absolutely do Facebook ad campaigns and Twitter campaigns. Just make sure that you really know what you're doing, that you lock down your demographics. Take full advantage of the ability to target demos. I mean, you can target countries, states, cities, age brackets, male, female, particular likes or interests. It's one of the there's nothing else out there on earth really that I can think of that you can target people so highly.
So back on this moving target for 2014, where do you see things going? Where do you see changes in social media and what should people maybe be looking out for or concerned with for the rest of the year?
I think companies, you know, or even people's personal businesses really need to take a look at customer service via social. It's an and a lot of people don't realize this. They say, okay, you know, somebody tweeted me or posted on our Facebook page that they were unhappy with their experience with my company. Change your attitude. And what I mean by that is it's an incredible opportunity anytime anybody reaches out to you via social media about a customer service issue. It's an opportunity to show the world on a public platform that your company is there behind their customers, that you guys go above and beyond to fix issues, and that you care about people. You know, 20 years ago, you didn't have this opportunity. If you made it right with a customer by mailing them a replacement or something like that after they sent you a letter or they called your company, nobody knew that you did right by the customer. But today, you have this unbelievable opportunity on a public stage to respond to people making customer service inquiries immediately in public with compassion and understanding and making it right. You have an opportunity to turn people from not having great experiences into raving fans and brand champions in front of a bunch of other people. And there may be a couple hundred people looking at your pages, deciding whether or not they should buy your car or fly your airline or use your law firm. And they, a situation like that may just be what they needed to say, okay, these guys are the real deal, and they take care of their customers, and yeah, this guy wasn't happy, but they made it right. I'm going to go with them. So customer service via social media is an opportunity and something that everyone needs to be looking at doing.
Well, I didn't expect you to go down this customer service route and social media. That makes a lot of sense. And I guess I've always looked at someone that complains on social media as someone that's in the restaurant yelling. They want attention. They want to make sure everybody knows they had a bad experience.
And you're absolutely right. I would say 80% of the time it is that, right? It's either somebody looking for a freebie, or it's someone looking for attention, or it's what we call in the social media world a troll, right? Somebody just looking to stir stuff up to be a pain in the ass. But it's still an opportunity to be the bigger person, to be the bigger brand and say, all right, we know this guy or this girl is being a jerk and that they're just trying to get something free or it's not true what they're saying. But you know what? It's an opportunity to look awesome. We're going to make it right. If it costs us $50 or a $50 gift certificate or a replacement item or whatever, even if we know they abuse the product, that $50 might earn you $5,000 from new customers or people who see that you guys take care of people.
That's a great point. Great opportunity to, like you said, turn someone from a distractor into a fan.
That's it.
Tell us
and other people along with that.
Yeah. Well, tell us about Fuel Online real quick and some of that free content and conversation you're creating for people. I know people follow, 365,000 people follow you. Tell us how people can get in touch with you as well.
Everybody can follow me on Twitter. My handle is Fuel Online. That's at Fuel Online. Follow me and say hey. I'll do my best to engage with you and we can kind of get the conversation going. Our website is fuelonline.co. That's not .com, it's .co. So it's fuelonline.co. And my book's called Tweet Naked, available on Amazon. Check out the reviews, see what people thought about it. They're all, pretty decent. People like it. It's my first book. And I wrote it not to be an author, but because I wanted to help people. You know, I thought I had a pretty good message and a different way of looking at things, and it's been very well received. Personally, I write for Forbes Entrepreneur Magazine. I've been on CNN. You guys can find my articles and stuff there as well.
Well, you definitely have the reach out there, and I love your fresh approach to the social media issue, if you will. And it really is it's overwhelming for people.
It's so much of a bigger conversation, you know?
Yeah. Well, and maybe give us that last vote of confidence or encouragement of where people, what they should do to get started tomorrow. Like, I guess, obviously, get your book, get online with you, look at your website, get some support. But any other words of encouragement?
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. Tweet Naked can help you if you're a beginner. It may be a little advanced if you're a beginner, but you'll appreciate it once you get rolling with it. All the way up to marketing managers at Fortune 100 companies seem to really get a lot of value out of it. But what I want to tell you is don't be afraid to get out there and be yourself. Personality and transparency trumps all. You don't want to necessarily tell people that you just use the restroom or that you guys were goofing off or whatnot, but letting people see that you're a real person or that there's a real team of interesting and fun people behind your brand. Be transparent, have fun with it, but the number one thing is provide value. Don't just go out there to be on Facebook or Twitter to sell. Go out there to be a resource and provide value, and everything will come with it. It's really not that complicated.
I love it. Well, Scott Levy, author of Tweet Naked, A Barrel Social Media Strategy for Boosting Your Business, and Your Brand and Your Business. Thanks so much for being with us, Scott. We got to have you back. I really appreciate it.
I appreciate it, Mark. It was a lot of fun.
Thanks. Thank you, sir. Well, folks, please continue to tune in on a regular basis. We'll be here next Tuesday at 11 a.m. Next week is the open forum. Send me your questions in advance. I take them in order of first receipt. So be with us next Tuesday at 11 a.m. Pacific for the open forum. Thanks, and have a great week.
Thanks for listening to another hour of refreshing strategies to better live your American dream.
Don't forget to get your free copy of Mark and Matt's ebooks and sign up for their weekly free newsletter with important tax deadlines and articles at refreshyourwealth.com.